Welcome to the Jay Porks Podcast. Coming to you straight out of Staten Island, New York. Bringing you a weekly episode with the finest music news, server problems, and whatever else is going on in Jay's life. Thank you so much for listening. Without further ado, here's Jay.
I don't get the joke. Temporary layoff, good times, easy credit ripple, good times, scratching and surviving, good times. None of these are good things. It's like sodomy is coming, good time. No, it's not. It's not at all. I'm not one of these guys who's blaming the world for where I'm at. I'm at where I'm at because I made bad decisions. But on top of those bad decisions, God's looping up my ass. There's not a thing I know how to do. All I know how to do is take videos at concerts. It's really all I know how to do. And write some words and do a podcast. I don't know how to do anything else. This idea that Pearl Jam are the heroes of the Seattle movement is absolute lunacy. It's insanity. And the no smoking policies kill me. No one wants to smoke in the venue, don't worry. But if the show is going to be 3 hours long, you better stamp my fucking hand and give me and show me where the door is to go out and smoke a cigarette. I paid $60 for a seat so I can retrieve the seats when I come back in from smoking a cigarette.
I always talk about weed. Force headline on you. I am not going to hit you. Here's what I don't want to do. I don't want to force things. I will never force headline on you. I am not going to hit you with a weird festival in, you know, Florida with one band I've heard of and a bunch of EDM artists on it. I'm not going to read that to you. It doesn't do you any good. It doesn't do me any.
So the lady goes, "Stop complaining. At least you're not dead."
Staten Island is a racist place. Just because you may not be a racist doesn't mean you can write an article saying, "Why are we known as racist? That's so wrong. It shouldn't be like that." Well, everybody's a racist. Spend your day clipping coupons. Go to the supermarket. Buy food. And prepare it at home. I know that's a wild and crazy idea.
You can't... Don't you dare! Spin Magazine, you do some dumb things. But I gotta tell you, you spent 7 weeks hyping the Ryan Adams covering Taylor Swift album, and then you panned it? Are you good?
Hey, yo. What is the word, people? Welcome to another action-packed edition of the Jay Porks Podcast. I'm Jay Porks, with me as always on the other side of the glass, making sure this is a well-oiled podcast machine growing in popularity every week is the ever-popular Nobody. My voice still isn't back to where I need it to be.
Okay.
So since you're going to hear this on Super Tuesday, I figured I'd spend the next hour and a half talking about politics. You guys want me to do that?
Nah, I don't want to do that either.
All right, I'm not doing that. I was just kidding. But you can't vote for that xenophobic asshole. You can't vote for fascism. You can't vote for racism. He's not telling it like it is. So don't vote for him. And that's that. I mean, I just can't. I'm going to say this every week. You can't vote for this guy. Vote for the Zodiac Killer so he can lose to whoever the Democrat is. Because whoever the Democrat is going to help out with the articles I'm about to read in the future. In the future, I mean like in 30 seconds. All right. So I'm going to talk about politics that matter to me. And the politics that matter to me all have to do with marijuana. Because this is it right here, folks. This election, there are 7 states with pot on the ballot this year, this election. And if we can get those states to say yes, we're not turning back. We're not at a reversible. Once we have 12 states with recreational pot, we're not at a place where we can go back anymore. Right now, there's only 2.5, 3, 4, whatever. I don't trust it. So, our good friends over at Leafly have shared a study with me. Because a lot of people say, well, first of all, all right, so let's get to this right now. Okay, so because America is obsessed with playing sexual Jenga and practicing their pullout game, a lot of you people, maybe not listening to the podcast, but I know a lot of people who have children. And there are people who have children all across the world. I know, breaking news. All across the country, people have children. So one of the arguments against legalizing the recreational use of marijuana, taxed and regulated just like booze, in a store with an age limit and all that, is that people are under the impression that this will make pot use in teens rise. They think that more teenagers are going to use pot because it's available in the store. So, Leafly has a little news thing for us here, and I'm going to read it. And yeah, I read it before, so I'm not going to stumble as much as I usually do. It's one of the main questions voters ask when they consider a cannabis measure. Will legalization, whether medical or adult use, encourage more kids to get high? With some form of legalization expected on at least half a dozen state ballots this November, data showing increased or decreased use by minors will likely be a powerful weapon in the battle for votes. That's why a study published by the International Journal of Drug Policy earlier this week is worth noting. In it, researchers at Columbia University debunked a 2015 report that indicated medical marijuana laws could cause an increase in underage cannabis use. Using the same data analyzed in the earlier report, the Columbia team found, quote, no evidence of a differential increase in past month marijuana use in youth that could be attributed to state medical marijuana legalization. What's going on here? Is this a he said, she said situation? Or is there something more to the story? Well, here's a hard look at what the data and analysis reveals. Last year's study conducted by Lisa Stolensberg, fellow Hebrew, of Florida International University, and also published in the International Journal of Drug Policy, found that, quote, medical cannabis laws amplify recreational juvenile cannabis use. The study found traction mostly amongst prohibitionist groups like Project SAM, which features Stolensberg's conclusion on its website. The Stolensberg study was curious, though, because it ran contrary to a previous research looking at similar data. Those studies found no difference in the prevalence of adolescent use before or after the passage of medical marijuana laws. Puzzled by the contradiction, the Columbia University team, led by Melanie Wall of the Mailman School of Public Health, took the same data set analyzed by Stolensberg and tried to replicate her results. They couldn't. Careful assessment of the analytical strategy employed by Stolberg, Wall reported, indicated that the earlier conclusions were the result, quote, the result of biased comparison, and thus the conclusions of Stolensberg et al. Are not supported by the data. Here's what happened. It's pretty simple, actually. In the 2015 study, Stolensberg compared underage cannabis use in medical marijuana states to states where medical use remains illegal. What went unmentioned in her study was the fact that medical marijuana states have already had higher rates of underage cannabis use prior to the passage of medical marijuana laws. In other words, more adolescents were using cannabis in Michigan than in, say, Iowa, even prior to the passage of Michigan's medical marijuana law. by comparing the adolescent use rate in Michigan after the passage of a medical marijuana of MMJ to the use of a non-MMJ state like Iowa, Stolensberg included that MMJ laws amplified recreational juvenile cannabis use. Medical marijuana, I'm just shortening it to MMJ because that's what it says. I'm guessing medical Mary Jane is what that means, which is cool. The Columbia University team characterized that tactfully and biased comparison. An appropriate analysis, they wrote, would compare adolescent use within the same state prior to the passage of MMJ laws. And after passage, Stolensberg wrote, they wrote, did not make this comparison. In fact, the Columbia team found, quote, there is no evidence of a significant difference in youth marijuana use after a state passes medical marijuana laws. Between 2002 and 2012, the time period that Stolensberg studied, some underage use increased, some decreased, and some remained the same, like the song. In Arizona, underage use increased 0.9% after MMJ laws went into effect. In Michigan, underage use, like the song, remained the same. In Montana, underage use declined 2.5%. Overall, underage use declined 0.1% after the adoption of medical marijuana laws in the 8 states that legalized marijuana medically between 2002 and 2011. Overall, we're down 0.1%. The Florida International University study, the Columbia team reported, is simply not substantiated by appropriate analysis of the data. One of these and I see a comment here and it says, here's what the article doesn't say. There's nothing wrong with using cannabis, so why decrease the use rates? Sure, kids shouldn't smoke weed, but kids want to grow up to be adults, and adults smoke weed. This hyperbaric fear-mongering about kids being interested in weed is no less absurd than worrying about kids being interested in sex. Smoking weed and having sex are normal human adult behaviors, and it's time we treated them that way. I love that comment. I usually hate the comments in any fucking story. That is brilliant. Flutie Flambert, holler at me. That comment is so good, I'm going to look for that person on Facebook right now. Wow. So true. Like, when you're a kid, like, sex is bad, but then you're supposed to be fruitful and multiply. So, kids, what have we learned here? Because I'll mention something. My friend Lisa, I told you, my friend Lisa's working Sundays. Sunday's a primo pizza. My friend Lisa's working for me, so I can not, because fuck, you know? It's being a waiter, and I don't want to do that. All right. So I was telling Lisa, I was like, listen, I don't envision a world where people are walking around smoking pot outside, you know? And she said, well, that's what everyone's doing in Denver. I was unaware of that, because when I was in Denver, that's not what they were doing. So, to the people smoking pot outside in downtown Denver, could you do me a favor and stop? Because you're making this whole movement look bad. Pot needs to be legal for the use. You use it in your house. You use it on your porch. Use it in your backyard. There should be no using it on the street. That just makes us all look bad. And to the people that say, well, if you legalize recreational marijuana, then the cops don't have anything to do, I suggest a simple, simple solution. You can have 2 police officers outside every single marijuana dispensary. And then when that kid goes in to buy pot for younger kids, you can arrest him. Because here's the deal. If you're in a state where there's legal recreational marijuana and you're still breaking the law, you deserve to go to jail and have your life ruined. Because we went through a sort of a revolution in those states, whereas something that was unheard of happened, and you people want to take it to the next level, and I can't get on board with that at all. Me personally, as a marijuana smoker, I smoke in the morning. I smoke before I leave the house, and I smoke when I get home. Wind up, wind down. That's it. On my days off, I will smoke more. Usually, I'm not in a position where I have enough money to be smoking all that pot all the time. I don't understand this. Like, first of all, I don't have enough money to be smoking pot all the time, let alone wasted smoking it outside where, you know, the wind can fucking make it not burn right and shit, blow it out of my hands, make it go out. I have to watch for cops. I can't get high outside. You know how annoying that is? But it hasn't raised this article. This is Leafly, by the way, reporting on the article. There hasn't been a rise. There's been a 0.1% drop in underage use. But I will tell you something about the idiot busboy at work. Right now, I hold in my hand. I can't believe I'm even saying this. Well, my real name isn't on this podcast, right? No one knows it's me. Right now, I'm holding in my hand a gummy. It's not a gummy bear, but it's a gummy candy that has 100 milligrams of THC in it. Shipped here from one of these legal states. You see, here's the thing. Me, as an adult, I'm smart enough to know that even though, you know, it's legal in some states, I'm not actually going to have illegal stuff mailed to my house. How crazy am I? Not that crazy. But some 15-year-old kid did, and he gave it to the busboy, and I'll be damned if we weren't eating edibles at work the other day and fucking being stony baloney all over the place. IDGAF. Like, are you kidding? I don't give a fuck. I won't be doing that at my new job. All right, moving on. More pot stories. What can I say? Andy likes the news bulletin, so I'm going to try to include the news bulletin as much as I can. Okay, as you know, as you can hear from my bad Andrew Dice Clay impersonation, that is my voice. I am from New York City. I'm from Staten Island, but I was in the city over the last couple days. Yesterday, I was in downtown Brooklyn getting my fingerprints done. I was getting my fingerprints done because this new job is going to involve me working for the Board of Education. Yeah, that's right. This idiot that you're listening to is going to get a job working for the Board of Education as soon as my background check clears. Now, we know I'm not a terrorist, and we know I'm not a child molester, and those are the things that they cared about. And I don't get arrested for weed all the time. It was like one time, and that was like 5 years ago, and I think I'll be fine, because I wasn't convicted of a felony in this state. Those were the questions. I was never convicted of a crime. I pleaded out all times. All one time. But anyway, check this out. 300 pounds of marijuana were seized in Greenwich Village. Greenwich Village, that's like, compared to where you are right now, that's close. Three men were busted after attempting to deliver a whopping 300 pounds of cannabis to a building in New York's Greenwich Village, police told CBS New York last month. New York PD narcotics officers arrested Patrick Johnson, Matthew Paringo, and Christopher Bender. His last name is Bender. After they were spotted carrying a large wooden crate into the building at 144 Bleecker Street. Thanks for giving me the address to the trap house, boys. 144 Bleecker Street, it's where we're at. Cops later discovered another 150-pound crate loaded with weed after searching a delivery truck on scene. Bridget Brennan, the city's special narcotics prosecutor, told WCBS she believes the pot was shipped by air from California to Newark Airport, then delivered by a courier van to the Greenwich Village address. Detectives have been tracking the shipment and sent a drug-sniffing dog to confirm the intercept. It's a huge amount of marijuana, and it's worth a lot of money, Brennan said, rather obviously. If it was going to be sold on the street level amounts by the ounce, it would probably be worth up to $1 million. The Megabust comes almost exactly 4 years after John Buchan, a supposed chieftain of the Westies Irish gang. I did not even know the Westies was real. I thought that was something that they made up on TV on my crime dramas like Castle. The Westies is a real thing, and they're Irish? Okay. The Westies Irish gang was busted for apparently flying $500,000 worth of California hydroponic to Farmingdale Airport on Long Island. We have no idea if the two operations are linked, but the lure of big bucks clearly continues to draw high stakes imports to the New York metro area. And those big bucks are in large part due to pricing being inflated by cannabis's illegal status. That's right, folks. People are going to try. 300 pounds of weed is a lot of weed. That's a lot of pot. That's a lot of pot that I'm not going to be able to buy. I mean, I'm assuming if it was going to Greenwich Village, some of it was going to come to me somehow. I'm assuming that's how this would have gone. Now, because pot is illegal in New York, and in a lot of states. And listen, I don't care. I don't care that whenever they say, hey, here's a list of medical marijuana states, I don't care that New York's on that list. There's no doctor writing that prescription. And if you know anyone in New York getting that prescription, tell them to email me. I'd like to have them on the podcast. That'll be my first guest who's not named Christina Rocks or Andy Durr. See, the price of pot is so high that you can't even. That's why people are. Some people are against. My brother, for instance. All my brother talks about is how if pot was legal in New York, we'd be paying. You know, I paid $9 tax on it in Colorado. $9 on an eighth. So a 50 was $59. Me personally, that seemed fair. But he said that the eighth is going to be like $70, $80, which is just fucking crazy to even say because, listen, the prices of cigarettes in New York are inflated that way because they don't want you to smoke cigarettes, but they can't put the tobacco industry out. Rent costs more in New York because people want to live here more. Pot isn't going to cost more here. People will just go somewhere else to get it. I am a proponent for you spend $50 on pot, you get taxed $9. I'm fine with that. But you are probably wondering, hey Jay, but how does pot prices differ by state? You probably wondered that. You said, Jay, you've been around. How is it over there compared to over here? And how is it over there compared to over here? Well, I don't need to pull out my own notebook. Because High Times has it for me. They have the February 2016 roundup, the market analysis, with the exception of the swag index. This is the average per ounce all indices, with the exception of Schwag Index, finished February above their previous month's average. The MIDS Index experienced the biggest increase, closing $14 above its January average. Headband made its first ever appearance in the top five submitted strains. Okay. So right now, on average, it's $305 for an ounce of good stuff. An ounce of really good stuff would cost you $350. About $371 after averages. Mid-level stuff is going right now for about $273 an ounce. And swag, which is the regular stuff with the seeds, is going for about $112 an ounce, which is less than I'm paying, motherfucker. The fuck's going on with that? All right. This has pot prices listed by state. They have a long list. They have a state, and they have the price. And we're going to go over this. First of all, the top five strains in the country right now. The number one strain is Kush at $320 an ounce. Diesel, not sour, diesel, $360 an ounce. Blue Dream weighing in at $275 an ounce. People wondering why Blue Dream is the most common, what most popular of the legal strains. I'll tell you, because it's $10 a gram. Girl Scout Cookies, number four, at $315 an ounce. And Headband, which is the Sour GOG Kush hybrid, is $355 an ounce. For instance, let's put it this way. So, like, say I'm, say I'm in Gadsden, Alabama, and I want an ounce of some super skunk. It's going to cost me $300. But if I go to Santa Rosa, California, and I want to get an ounce of Girl Scout cookies, it's only going to cost me $150. Because it's legal in that state. Therefore, it costs less. Although an ounce of California Blue Dream in San Francisco is going to go for $320, but I'm assuming that San Francisco has inflated prices on everything. Boulder, Colorado has Skywalker OG going at $275 an ounce, and Sour Diesel in Denver is $300 an ounce. See, from a New Yorker's, I don't know if you're, I don't know how many of you are familiar with, like, good strains of pot at all. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with New Yorkers. Maybe you're all from New York. Maybe none of you are. New Yorkers have this thing where they love the Sour Diesel. They love Sour Diesel. Every time I call one of my guys, like, I got some good shit. I got some new Sour D. Sour Diesel's a great strain. And, listen. I'm not saying it's bad pot. I'm saying that it tastes like fucking gasoline. I mean, look, it tastes really good. But it's on the verge of really good and, like, is this too much? It's a hybrid, more really a sativa. And when you talk to people, they say that New York wants Sour Diesel. That's a New York thing. Go to other states, they laugh. So a lot of dealers in New York have Sour Diesel because customers love Sour Diesel because obviously because people in New York are stupid and they think, oh, the strongest smell equals the best pot. Not necessarily, because when you smoke that and then you're walking around the rest of the day and you still smell like pot, that's going to be quite bothersome for you. What else is going on this list here? In Hartford, Connecticut, you can get an ounce of Headband for $350. In Newark, Delaware, you can get an ounce of AK-47 for $375. In Florida, in Miami, too. Well, in Miami, it's inflated. Granddaddy Perp going at $360 an ounce. Purple Kush going at $360 an ounce in Atlanta, Georgia. I was just smoking some Purple Kush. Fairly good. Look at this, Massachusetts. ChemDog is $400 an ounce. Massachusetts is feeling that inflation. Girl Scout Cookies down to $230 an ounce in Michigan, along with Blue Dream, is $200 an ounce in Michigan. I think at this point, they just want you to come to Michigan. Now, check this out. New York. First of all, in Hoboken, New Jersey, Guava Chem is $375 an ounce. Just going to go out and say that. In Syracuse, which is, if you want to compare where I am to Syracuse, I'm in New York. I'm in one of the five boroughs of New York City. Syracuse is probably an 8 to 10 hour drive away. I think I'm estimating that right. It is all the way upstate. I mean, closer to Canada than it is to me, okay? So, like, Syracuse, Albany, that's all up there. So, in Syracuse, an ounce of OG Kush which I'm currently smoking. Well, not currently, but I'm going to roll up after this podcast. An ounce of OG Kush is $280 in Syracuse. $280. In Brooklyn, you want to get an ounce of Space Queen, it's $380. So, I know one is Space Queen and one is OG Kush, but you drove that downstate and you upped me $100. Do you see what I'm saying? Now, $380. How many states have ounces above $380? Let's go to the... We have... Arizona is one. Massachusetts is two. Minnesota is tied. Tennessee is tied. That's it. And in fact, they're all tied. The only state with more expensive pot than New York, the only place with more expensive pot than New York City, is oddly enough, Massachusetts. But that's because it's ChemDog. If it was OG Kush, it would probably be cheaper. Do you see what I'm saying? Columbus, Ohio, they got Jelly Bean for $360 an ounce. Look at this. In Oregon, oh my God. In Oregon, an ounce of Banana Kush is going to cost you $210, and an ounce of Girl Scout cookies will cost you $200. So, in essence, you can, for $410, you can buy 2 ounces of some crazy shit, and that would be less. That would be $10 more than 1 ounce of ChemDog in Massachusetts. Boston, to be exact. Oh, there's one more. Master Kush. Master Kush in Salt Lake City, Utah is $400. But you have to duck the Mormon population. It's a whole fucking thing there. Look at Washington State. Bruce Banner. Bruce Banner's 200 an ounce. Jack the Ripper's 220. Jesus Christ. You've got to be kidding me. And they have, like, Sydney, Australia, and the United Kingdom, but I can't translate pounds. There's a strand called Super Chunk? No, it's pineapple chunk. All right. So there's your pot prices. So, in essence, what I'm saying to you is, because pot is illegal, that $400 I'm spending on an ounce, $380 I'm going to spend on an ounce of Space Queen doesn't get taxed. So the government doesn't get any of that money. See, the government could have a percentage of that. And they could use it to pay for things, you know? Research and stuff. First, it needs to get moved to a Schedule 2 drug so more doctors can study it. And if it's a Schedule 2 drug, technically a doctor could prescribe it to you. Just like cocaine. They do have medical cocaine. I don't know what it's for. I've seen it. Maybe I've seen it on TV. I don't know. Maybe it's something I made up. I can't believe in California now, in Santa Rosa, California, an ounce of Girl Scout cookies is going for $150. I have that on me right now. Fingerprinting yesterday cost me $130. Shit. Could have saved $20 and got somebody to fucking send me some pot. So that's the February pot prices across the United States. Okay. And the last of my drug topics for today. There's an article on High Times that details the U.S. government may push for international drug decriminalization during UNGAS 2016. Now let's explain what that means. Although President Obama has not given any official indication, a leading official with the U.S. State Department seems confident that prohibition may become unhinged at some point in 2016 and lead to the possible decriminalization of all illegal drugs across the globe. On Tuesday, William Brownfield, an assistant secretary of state for the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, told reporters that U.S. officials are currently at the drawing board in an attempt to draft an all-powerful piece of documentation, what he calls a pragmatic reform agenda, that they intend to present at the upcoming United Nations General Assembly special session, on drugs next month in New York City. At its core, Brownfield suggests that the proposed recommitment to the three international drug conventions would be designed to persuade countries to remove the focus of the drug war away from arrests and harsh penalties, instead attack the issue from a public health standpoint. Quote, "We will call for pragmatic and concrete criminal justice reform, areas such as alternatives to incarceration or drug courts, or sentencing reform," he said. In other words, as President Obama has said many times, to decriminalize much of the basic behavior in drug consumption in order to focus scarce law enforcement resources on the greater challenge of the large transitional criminal organizations. It has been speculated over the past several years that a major rewrite in the UN's drug treaties would be necessary before governments all over the world began exploring alternative approaches to handling drugs without violating international law. However, with the details of the Obama administration's recommended revisions are not completely clear, they do appear to support policies or perhaps philosophies that remain in line with the original text of the three conventions. When asked if the outcome of UNGAS 2016 would give countries the green light to decriminalize the possession and use of illegal substances, Brownfield responded by trying to offer some clarification into the language of the drug treaties, saying that they were never intended to put people in jail simply for using drugs. The conventions, as I mentioned, do not have a substantial amount of discretionary authority built in them. They do not require, in the text of the convention, the criminalization of the consumption of a product. Then a nation can teach its own determination there. So as long as it does that in a way that's consistent with the objective of reducing the harm caused to societies, communities, and individuals of the product. Brownfield went on to explain that the U.S. government's hands-off approach to the four states that have established fully legal cannabis markets does not violate treaty obligations because, first, the federal law, the national law, still proscribes and prohibits marijuana, and second, because of the objective, as asserted by the states themselves, is still to reduce harm caused by the consumption of marijuana. However, despite the fact that over half the states have legalized the leaf for medicinal and recreational purposes, not to mention attempts in several other countries to reform policies on the substance, Brownfield told Samuel Oakford of Vice News that the United States government is still hell-bent on limiting and eventually eliminating the use of marijuana in the United States of America because of its harm and dangers, accepting and not entering into the medical exception issue. Huh? That doesn't make any sense. How would they do that if they're legalizing it? Whatever. All right, moving on. Last week, the International Narcotics Control Board in Vienna published a preliminary statement that jives with the original message that Brownfield attempted to relay during a press event earlier this week in New York. The agency's 2015 report, which states the international drug control treaties do not mandate a war on drugs, is expected to be a centralized focus of the 2016 UN Central Special Session of the General Assembly, scheduled to get underway in April. It is not the case that the world must choose between militarized drug law enforcement on one hand and the legalization of non-medical use of drugs on the other, but rather put health and welfare at the center of balanced drug policy. President Werner Sipp of INCB said in a press statement. So what does this all mean? No, really, what does this all mean? If you know, tweet at me or shoot me an email, because I have no idea. The first half of this article tends to lead me to believe that they want to not put people in jail for drugs anymore and decriminalize them all. But then there's a... The United States government is still hell-bent on limiting and eventually eliminating the use of marijuana in the United States of America because of its harm and its dangers, accepting and it's not and not entering it into the medical exception issue. That doesn't make any sense. Cigarettes do nothing for you. They are very legal. Pot can be like cigarettes. It can be that thing that everybody hates that you do. But you know what? There comes a time. There comes a time in everyone's life where there's got to be a revolution. And the reefer madness days are over. I am under the impression that in 1963, if a certain president wasn't killed, then I'm thinking we wouldn't have gotten a whole Nixon agenda war on drugs and set this whole thing back again. Like in 1960, like put it this way, at Woodstock, people were openly smoking pot and everything, and that was cool. What has changed? Nancy Reagan, just say no. I gotta tell you something. I'm holding up two fingers to Nancy Reagan, and they're not nice ones. Fuck you. Remember that time Nancy Reagan started a Just Say No campaign while her husband funded, helped freeway Rick Ross start a nationwide crack epidemic? Do you remember that? I remember that. No one cares about that. All right, anyway. So we're hoping that all drugs are legal in April. All around the world. And if that was the case, boy, would traveling get easier. Am I right? Shit. Okay. This podcast used to be about music, and it's still going to be. As you know, every week, musical headlines are powered by Antiquiet. Antiquiet is your source for quality, no clickbait, no bullshit. Excuse me. If you head over to antiquiet.com, there is a few articles over here, such as from South by Southwest, 68, You'll Miss Us, got new music. Got new music from Spirit in the Room, catching up with them. We've also got The Last Shadow Puppets, Everything You've Come to Expect. It's an English alt-rock group featuring Arctic Monkeys' Alex Turner. But the big news this week, the big news. I'll admit, I was taken aback. Radiohead is going on tour. Radiohead. Now, I know, I make fun of Radiohead. I do. I openly admit that Radiohead, like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, are a band that I'm going to make fun of a lot. But they're not a band like Pearl Jam or the Foo Fighters that, you know, I really hate. I hate Adams for Peace. I hate Tom York's solo DJ sets. I hate that. I pretty much hate everything Tom York does that's not the 90s, honestly. There's no news when Radiohead recently announced their first live show since 2012, including several festivals around the world. Yesterday, the band has announced a separate round of shows for a world tour, which begins in May. Find their schedule below. According to the band's website, these are only headlining dates that the band will play in 2016. There is no news as to when a new Radiohead album might be coming out. In January, fans speculated that a new album was imminent when it emerged that the group had registered a new company, Dawn Chorus LLP. It was notable because the band also established companies before the surprise release of both In Rainbows and King of Limbs. And an update said the band has also shared a new piece of artwork on Twitter and Facebook, which you can also find below. I am at Pitchfork. I will share the article with you. The band's been working on a new LP for a while. In separate interviews given in 2015, Johnny Greenwood and Philip Selway discussed the band's progress, with Selway saying the record would become quite a full schedule. Recording would become quite a full schedule in September. They were then photographed in the studio back in September, right before Dawn Chorus was established. In October, Greenwood shot down reports that the album was done, said they had completely lots, but said they had completed lots, and were about to go through it. And there's a link up here. Read. You could 19 unreleased radio songs that could be on the next album. If we've heard them, why are they on the album? All right. After hanging overseas for a little while, on January 26th and 27th, Madison Square Garden, Radiohead. I might go to this. We're also playing the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles. Oh, shit. Okay, the only dates in America... Alright, there's Quebec, but that's a festival. The only dates in America are two at the Garden and two at the Shrine Auditorium in L.A. Only us coastal snobs get Radiohead, I guess. Will they play Creep? They're not gonna play Creep. Jay, stop convincing yourself that Radiohead's going to play Creep. They're not going to play Creep. I will tell you this, though. The Garden is a tough place to sell out. I mean, the last couple times I've been there, Ozzy didn't sell it out. And it's fucking Ozzy. So, I'm thinking, I've got time to wait for this background check. And I might be working a second job. Because I'm going to keep the waiter job. If I have two jobs in April and May, maybe I could see. If I make more money, I see more shows. If I see more shows, we hear more about them on my podcast. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want that? Okay. We out here. But before we get up on out of here, I'm going to give you the list of websites you need to go to help keep me in business. First of all, there is always ConcertConfessions.com. That's where you'll get all your live music news and reviews for the fans by the fans. Got some good stuff going on. Also need you to go to ChristinaRocks.com, HangTheDJ, 89XRadio.com every Sunday morning for the Time Warp. That's 89XRadio.com every Sunday morning, and her blog is ChristinaRocks.com. Christina does not contain an H. Check her out. Tweet at her, at ChristinaRocks. She is the coolest cucumber inside of the salad. Go to Dara Network Headquarters, HQ. That's where you get all the latest episodes of Jesse Unplugged, The Tyler Kale Show, Spin Class with Tyler and Andy. Did I say Jesse Unplugged? The flagship show, The Andy Dara Show, and the smooth, sultry tones of the Jay Porks podcast. All at andydara.com. Of course, we got... Be on the lookout. Follow my Twitter, at JPorks, because we got the... After WrestleMania, we have the new wrestling podcast premiering. It's going to be once a month. It's going to be me and Matt. me and my boy Matt from work, we are going to do it. Matt runs nyintake.com. It's a sports blog. We're going to team up, and we're going to have post pay-per-view podcasts once a month, because I don't want girls to know that if girls find out I watch wrestling, I'm not going to really enter them, if you want to know the truth. Okay. And, of course, the headlines every week, whether they be weed or not weed, they be powered by Antiquiet. So until next week, folks, Wacky Weed and Warren Zevon, and please don't vote for Donald Trump, and please don't vote for Donald Trump. Please don't vote for Donald Trump. Please, please, God, please don't vote for Donald Trump. Please don't vote for Donald Trump. I beg you guys. I beg you to not vote for this fascist, xenophobic asshole. Late.
This has been the J Porks Experience. Thank you so much for listening.